is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
Big Apple Coffee Party presented A Propaganda Manufacturer's Consent, a forum to explore the use of propaganda by corporate media, the intelligence and the military industrial complex, the political elites and others in power to manage and manipulate the news to create an accepted narrative to foster an agreed-upon agenda. The panel of experts on media and journalists have presented their views on the existence of propaganda, its negative impact on our society, and the imperative for an educated and informed public to maintain and enhance a democracy. They were introduced by Lee Camp, host of the national TV show Redacted Tonight.
The author of several books, including best-selling Republican Gomorrah, Goliath, The 51-Day War, and The Management of Savagery. He has produced several documentaries, including Killing Gaza, and he founded The Gray Zone in 2015 to shine a journalistic light on America's state of perpetual war and its dangerous domestic repercussions. Please give it up for Max Lovendahl! Is a writer and activist for peace and justice issues. She has been an editor and senior columnist for Black Agenda Reports. She serves on the coordinating committee of the Black Alliance for Peace. She is a contributor to the OR book anthology In Defense of Julian Assange. Her first book, Presidential, Black America and the Presidents, will be published by Searforth Press on February 4th, 2020. Please give it up for Margaret Kimberly! Our next panelist is the host of Pushback, a news show from the Gray Zone and a contributor to The Nation magazine. His coverage of Russiagate won a 2019 Izzy Award for Outstanding Achievement in Independent Media. Please give it up for Aaron Nuffey!
Aaron, the issue of how propaganda manufactures consent, in the context of how I think propaganda in the Trump era has enrolled liberals and progressives in something really dangerous for the world, also dangerous politically for progressive politics in general, and the prospect of stopping right-wing politicians and right-wing power. We all know now Russiagate was a scam and it was a political failure. It happened for very deliberate reasons. It arose, I think, because of the convergence of very powerful interests. All those interests had the same ultimate interest, which is protecting their own privilege. The beauty of their con is they got to enroll millions of people in it, including liberals and progressives. Russiagate begins with the 2016 campaign. Already on the campaign trail, you have national security state elites both voicing public opposition and concern about Donald Trump, not because they care about his racism or his misogyny, but because they don't see him as a suitable steward of the U.S. empire. They also don't like the fact that he's deviating from certain orthodoxies, although the extent to which he's sincere about that is in question. But he's talking about having better relations with Russia, and he's also voicing rhetorical opposition to military intervention abroad. So he's challenging the consensus of the bipartisan foreign policy establishment, perhaps doing it as a con. He's a good salesman, and I think it was a con. But nonetheless, he's doing it. So we see the hostility to Trump already arising then. Meanwhile, what's going on behind the scenes, we learn later on, is an actual investigation of a potential Trump-Russia conspiracy based on totally specious grounds. We don't have to go into now, but the results show just how baseless it was. The Mueller report couldn't even find a single member of the Trump campaign interacting with anybody actually acting on the Russian government's behalf. Only people who claim to know Russians or who might have a Russian passport. Meanwhile, you have the Clinton campaign. Even before the election, they were latching onto this talking point that they had developed as of Trump as a Putin puppet. And after they lose the election in a surprise, shocking loss, they have a meeting, as reported in the book Shattered, within 24 hours of Hillary Clinton's concession speech, and they decide that this election was not on the up and up, one of the main reasons they lost was James Comey, the FBI director, who came out with an October surprise, but also Russia. And they decide very deliberately to push that narrative above all else. And from that point, we have a nonstop effort blaming Russia and blaming stolen emails for the loss of the Clinton campaign. Zero self-reflection on the part of the Clintons and their people for why they actually lost. And there's a very good reason for that, because honest self-reflection would mean looking critically at your own policies. And given the fact that so many people were duped into believing that Trump was a working-class champion who was going to take on the neoliberal establishment, for Democrats to transform and to actually offer a real alternative to Trump and show people why that was a con, that would mean challenging their own privileged role within that system and basically giving up their role as the beneficiaries of the corrupt system that Trump fooled people into thinking he was opposing. And then we have the media latching onto this because, A, you know, catering to the national security state and the establishment wing is generally the function of the elite media, which wants to sell advertisements to privileged sectors and wants to reach elite audiences and sell them a worldview that reinforces their own privilege. And also, this whole thing is great for ratings to have a nonstop spy theater. Well, what is the impact on everybody else? Well, the population, after some initial flare-ups of authentic resistance, remember all of us going to the airports to oppose the Muslim ban, and the excitement of an actual resistance in the early days of the Trump era, well, all that gets kicked to the curb, and the general population is reduced to being spectators in an inter-elite battle, where now all of a sudden intelligence officials are our heroes, and Trump is to be opposed not because of anything he's doing to the general population, not because of his record tax hikes, the largest upward transfer of wealth in U.S. history with his tax cut, but because he's not saying mean things about Vladimir Putin. And in public, he's appearing nice to Vladimir Putin. And what does this lead to? Trump's so-called resistance is reduced to being led by unhinged conspiracy theorists, positing that Trump is a Russian agent. And all this hands Trump a massive gift in that instead of actually opposing him, people are clinging on to these crazy theories. Another gift comes when all this finally collapses, culminating in Robert Mueller, our savior figure, delivering testimony in July and not even being familiar with the details of his own investigation, the one that was supposed to bring down Donald Trump. One day later, Ukraine Gate begins. It's a similar thing. The one difference is that this time it looks like Trump actually did something, some kind of scheme that he was overseeing to pressure Ukraine. But the parallels to Russiagate are enough, I think, to give pause and to be seriously concerned. Again, the source of the worry originates with the national security state. And what are they upset about? When Trump throws aid to Palestinian refugees, to UNRWA, in a deliberate bid, openly expressed, to basically pressure Palestinian negotiators to give up their internationally recognized right of return. So straight up blackmail. Or when Trump freezes aid to Central American migrants and in fact uses that aid to pay the salaries of the coup plotters who he's trying to install in Venezuela. But what did he do here? He froze briefly some money that was used to buy U.S. weapons to give to Ukraine to continue a proxy war that the U.S. basically started back in 2014. In the process, he also sought some investigations that could have implicated Joe Biden, who also happens to be another member of the elite, in the same way that the damage of Russiagate, or the main offense that Trump was supposedly committed, was that he conspired in an effort to weaken another member of the elite, Hillary Clinton, which of course he didn't. But in this case, again, Trump goes after Joe Biden, and you can't do that. You can bomb Cambodia like Nixon did, you can kill and spy on activists like Nixon did. That's not impeachable, but going after another faction of the elite, that is. And so right now we're once again being enrolled in another national security state generated quote-unquote scandal with the promise again that that is going to bring down Trump. And the fantasy of this being the beginning of the end is once again very much prevalent. That's a danger for domestic politics to the world. The fact that the underlying policy is not even scrutinized. So why are we arming Ukraine? Why are we fueling this proxy war? And why are we incentivizing Trump to increase tensions with nuclear-armed Russia? That is not being discussed. That is one area where the dangers here are catastrophic, not just for progressive political fortunes, but for the entire world.
Margaret?
When I was trying to figure out what to talk about propaganda, so much material there. There's a few examples. Ukrainegate now is in the news. And there have been thousands of words written, but do they ever tell you that the United States overthrew the elected president of Ukraine, and that when the U.S. and other NATO nations deposed him, they put people in office, some of whom were just out-and-out Nazi sympathizers? He mentioned, you hear about Venezuela a lot. Maduro has to talk to the opposition. Well, he did. And when he and opposition forces were on the verge of together jointly asking for an end to sanctions, the U.S. government dropped the hammer, told the opposition not to talk to him anymore, and said Guaido is president. Syria, President Assad, gassed his own people, we're told over and over again. But now there are two whistleblowers from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons who dissent from the official findings and publicly state they will rig. So I decided to stick with the domestic issue. In reference to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. And it all started when he opposed efforts to impose verified voting, paper ballots, and so forth. Of course, there's more propaganda telling us that the Russian government, they didn't just collude, they hacked our voting system. Moscow Mitch was born. Now, he does not want verifiable voting, that's true, but the reasons have nothing to do with Russia. The Republican Party lives and dies by its ability to steal votes, mostly from black people. There's voter suppression through felon disenfranchisement, voter ID laws. There's also actual theft and the changing of votes with these mechanical systems. And the victims of these practices are mostly black people, but the news didn't mention this, and neither did most black people, sadly. The cover-up of vote theft is among the most prevalent points of propaganda in the country. And McConnell ought to be exposed, but for the right reasons. We've seen two presidential elections since 2000 where the outcome was determined by this. Bush did it in 2000, his brother disenfranchised black Floridians. Hillary Clinton, we're told, lost the Electoral College by only 78,000 votes. But there were thousands of uncounted votes in places like Detroit. And lies by the corporate media and their collusion with the Democratic Party ensures that this is going to go on. And by the way, Democrats don't say anything about this either. I have a special kind of anger for the people who we at the Black Agenda Report call the Black Misleadership class. They know the deal. They know why Mitch McConnell wants to steal votes, but they don't say anything because they're captives of the Democratic Party. Some fear biting the hand that feeds them, some are cynics, some may be true believers, but the end result is that this injustice goes on. Along comes 2016. A racist, failed real estate developer, and Trump is that, seated out with promoting himself through the media. And he defeated Hillary Clinton, who was a terrible politician, who had her own integrity issues, and that allowed him to squeak through in the Electoral College along with the vote theft. But neither she nor the Democrats say anything about the Electoral College. So the Democrats, they claim to be the inclusive party, the progressive party, but they're nothing of the sort. The differences between the two parties are small and getting smaller. And all they can say is that they're outwardly less racist than Republicans. Starting with Bill Clinton, when they decided to become a corporate-backed party as much as a Republican, what did we get? Bill Clinton, media consolidation, welfare reform that put millions of people into poverty, bombing Serbia, pushing NATO expansion. Barack Obama bailed out the banks with trillions of dollars, destroyed Libya, tried to destroy Syria, and never said anything about the black people who loved him unless his goal was to scold and dismiss them. So Trump was a match for the black people for very obvious reasons. Instinctively, we knew someone talking about Make America Great Again wasn't talking about us. But he won and solidified black people's allegiance to this party. And that's why otherwise smart people will talk about Moscow Mitchell collusion or some other such thing. And I think it's Russiagate, I think it resonates because it's comforting to people. It's hard to admit that the Democrats are as bad as they are, that Hillary Clinton was as bad as she was, and it's easier to believe in some guy in foreign country who actually changed the results of an election, and not the party he cleaned to that raised $1 billion and still couldn't get 78,000 more votes. But the cure for all this propaganda is to tell the truth. And who's going to tell it? Political duopoly is composed of a far-right party and a center-right party. I don't even know if the Democrats are center-right anymore. But they think of collusion. They collude with the corporate media. They dole out information as misinformation. So black people have gone from being the most savvy, most politically minded group in the country, the most left-leaning traditionally, and now live in hope that the same intelligence agencies that destroyed our liberation movement are suddenly going to save us from Trump. So we have so many lies going on here, and propaganda is nothing but systematized lying that ramped up into high gear when the system wanted to make people who made demands go away. History has to be disappeared. A few days ago was the 50th anniversary of enormous marches in Washington and around the country against the Vietnam War. And if I didn't remember it myself, I might not know that it happened. So we're propagandized to believe that that never happened, which means you can't do it again, which means you have to rely on the electoral system. All you can do is vote, and you have to vote for the Democrats, and you can't ask them anything, you can't demand anything, because then you'll get Trump. But people in the rest of the world are in movement, in Haiti, in Ecuador, in Bolivia. And many of us say, why doesn't that happen here? So here we are with Ukraine Gate starting, and the media, and the it's disgusting to watch these. I can't stomach it for very long. So we have a situation where people who are triggered by Trump are unable to think for themselves and never follow the logical path of naming and shaming the people whose corruption and its resulting ineptitude put him in office. So here we are, stuck with people who are on the losing side. But not only do people think the Democrats are their only political choice, but this party they cling to can't even deliver on its claim of electability. It's only here, electability, electability. They lost 1,000 seats while Obama was president. In Congress, in state legislatures, all they had left was presidency, they messed up and they lost that too. But people, most people won't say so. And if there's a couple things I know I'm over time a little bit. You can tell you're being propagandized if you're told one month, James Comey is evil, it's his fault Trump is president. And then a few months later, Comey, hooray, he's going to save us. Jeff Sessions, when he appointed an attorney general, people were like, oh my God, it's a terrible old segregationist. Then there was some Russiagate nonsense and he could be fired. And people literally protested to protect Jeff Sessions. Well, at least you know people who are capable of still going of protesting. So I'm gonna but that's all because of propaganda, and it's nothing but lies being told endlessly by powerful people and institutions. Thank you all very much.
I want to kind of pick up where Margaret left off. I remember a time not too long ago in a galaxy not far away when hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers marched in the streets against the war. Do you all remember that? Yeah. What the hell happened? The war's never stopped. And the rallies against them, they kind of have dwindled out. Notice that.
Yeah.
2 minutes. You're looking well. And the most shocking thing is that some of our major progressive media institutions have actually become platforms for promoting these wars. You know what I'm talking about. Many self-identified progressives, Aaron has demonstrated again and again, have become captives to the partisan theater scripted by the bureaucratic architecture of the national security state that has on its record the destabilization of large swaths the globe. And so while Chileans and Haitians and Ecuadorians and indigenous and leftist Bolivians are in open revolt against austerity policies and right-wing governments imposed on them from within and without, so many self-styled progressives have been reduced to spectators, captivated by wall-to-wall coverage of Russiagate and Ukrainegate on corporate networks that function as a de facto retirement community for disgruntled spooks. What's going on here is that the managers of savagery, the managers of our national security state, these soft-handed super predators, seem to have learned the lessons of Iraq, which is that even the most advanced conventional army on earth can be ground down by a few committed fedayeen. And that middle-class Americans will take to the streets when the coffins of their boys come home. And so the national security state has turned to hybrid warfare, a sophisticated three-tiered method of war-making that contains little risk of domestic political repercussions. It's absolutely guaranteed to generate blowback in the form of, for example, mass civilian casualty events like the Manchester bombing carried out by a UK proxy fighter who helped destroy the Libyan government and went to and from Libya on the MI6 rat line, or through the rise of right-wing nationalist forces from Western Europe to Washington, who successfully exploited the fear and loathing of desperate refugees created by NATO's regime change wars. The first dimension of hybrid warfare should be the most familiar, non-conventional war, or arming the rebels, the moderate rebels, as we've seen in Syria, in Libya, and as we see in Ukraine, where arms are even flowing into the hands of the neo-Nazi Azov Battalion, despite the best efforts of members of Congress, like John Conyers, who's no longer there. And before that, you know about the arming the Contras in Central America. For some reason, Democrats were willing to speak out against that at that time. Different era. When the government the rebels are facing begins to kill and imprison them in ham-handed fashion in order to preserve the state that is under attack by the most powerful empire in history, that government becomes the target of 800-page Human Rights Watch reports and then faces the second weapon in hybrid warfare, which is sanctions or unilateral coercive measures aimed to destroy their economies and pulverize their civilian populations. I just witnessed a really disturbing interview with Elizabeth Warren on Pod Save America, this podcast of these kind of like yuppie democratic apparatchiks. And this guy, I think it's like Tommy Vitor saying, you know, Trump has such a great policy in Venezuela. It was a brilliant diplomatic move, and not just recognizing Juan Guaido, who's like the Pete Buttigieg of Latin America. But in preventing Venezuela from having an economy, he said, preventing Venezuela from having an economy. And Elizabeth Warren comes up, she says, And I think she's going to say something rational. She said, I'm all for the sanctions. I'm all for recognizing one way, but she's all in. I mean, I guess this is what Hillary Clinton meant by saying she was going to run again, is it? And so, big structural change daily. Rolling over for IMF structural readjustment policy failure. This is the insidiousness, again, of hybrid warfare, where you have a self-styled progressive advancing economic terrorism against civilian populations from Venezuela to Iran to Syria, where people went without heating oil last winter. The final and most insidious aspect of hybrid warfare, which was information warfare. This modality weaponizes the media and civil society to generate consent among the public for what impeachment celebrity and previously unknown national security apparatchik Alexander Vindman called the interagency consensus of foreign policy, which the president is apparently forbidden from opposing even if he or she was elected to do so. The intelligence community, which is neither communal nor intelligent, has the final say on foreign policy. And whatever, whoever we vote for, doesn't matter. Regime change, empire. So in order to manufacture consent for the imperial foreign policy consensus, our national security state establishes propaganda constructs to invent reality. funded by CIA spin-offs like USAID and the National Endowment for Democracy, which was created to do what the CIA used to do covertly, but this time overtly in the open. The NED is the engine of violent right-wing opposition movements from Nicaragua to Venezuela to Bolivia, where the U.S.-backed coup leader, Luis Fernando Camacho, and his Sig Highland paramilitaries have terrorized indigenous people for years. Behold the fruits of democracy promotion, the most notable award-winning propaganda construct known as the Syrian White Helmets, which were established not in Syria, but in Turkey by a former military intelligence officer named James Lemersurier, handed over $100 million by the British Foreign Office, USAID, given HD cameras to enter areas controlled by the local affiliate of Al-Qaeda and its allies, areas where Western journalists were forbidden from entering for fear of literally losing their heads. They were at the forefront of every major red line event alleging chemical weapons use and successfully helping to trigger U.S. military interventions which prolonged the war and prolonged the death of so many Syrians, and who now face unprecedented scrutiny thanks to the appearance of the two previously mentioned whistleblowers in the OPCW, who alleged that the Douma chemical weapons attack was, in fact, not a chemical weapons attack and a pro-war fabrication. We were lied to, again, the mysterious death of Lemersurier, who's been branded a hero by the New York Times and a white savior by the Washington Post, who, according to the Washington Post Middle East correspondent, saved more people than anyone in Syria, has been predictably swept under the rug. More so than Jeffrey Epstein said. A few isolated critics of this propaganda construct and of regime change operations in Latin America, domestic political deceptions like Russiagate have been blacklisted, labeled Assadists, Russian and Venezuelan assets, and suppressed on social media while Pod Save America is pushed to the top of your YouTube feed. National security state marionettes like Jake Tapper win awards and plaudits for pushing the consensus line, while the most important journalist publisher of our time, Julian Assange, languishes in a cell, threatened with extradition to a country he's not a citizen of, and threatened with torture. I thought about Assange a lot in my own prison cell, where I spent 2 days on a false charge fabricated by members of a U.S.-backed Venezuelan opposition, and I thought about what we could do to support him. And one thing we can do is to continue to use WikiLeaks as a treasure trove of information, of proven facts exposing the sadism of the management of strategy in our national security state, and to inform the public about what empire truly does and what it means for people on the other side of the gun. And at the gray zone, we've been going to the ground and breaking the media blockade in countries that are targeted for regime change simply for their desire to be independent and sovereign, and in some cases, socialist. We are going to say the unsaid and the unsayable, because so much of propaganda is rendering us silent and rendering the public ignorant. We are going to put out the fires that these arsonists keep lighting across the globe.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash.